Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the iSports MSU Red Cedar Report. I am Tyler Hayward. The Red Cedar Report is part of iSportsWeb.com. Be sure to check out that website for the latest sports news and opinions. You can like us on Facebook or follow the show on Twitter at Red Cedar Report to listen to our archived podcast. We have a full house today as fellow iSportsWeb contributors Mike Sterner and Ryan McCumber join me as we put on our detective hats and try to get to the bottom of Michigan State's struggles, if you want to call them that, over the last few weeks. With a loss tomorrow night, outside of 0-1 start, the Spartans would fall below 500 in conference play for just the second time since the 2006-2007 season. And right now they're practically out of the conference race as Iowa holds what's pretty much a four-game lead on the Spartans after they swept the season series, and they have a three-game lead or two-and-a-half-game lead right now. Ryan, we'll start with you. We talked a little bit the other day about the struggles, and we saw a couple things that we talked about actually come to fruition in the game against Wisconsin. Aaron Harris starting for Bryn Forbes, because Aaron Harris get his mind right when he comes off the bench. Deontay Davis, he cracked the starting lineup. If a Spartan still walked out of Madison with an L, what did you see in the game that attributed to the loss?
I saw a lot of hand fouls that it's their fault because they haven't learned not to foul, how to deal with these new rules. And Izzo even said it himself. I mean, Wisconsin had like 38 free throws, and MSU had 18. There's a reason for that. I mean, yes, Ted Valentine is one of the worst officials in all college sports. He's awful. But at the same time, you've got to learn how to deal with these new rules with the freedom of movement stuff. But, I mean, they played, they didn't play well. Wisconsin just played pretty. I mean, Wisconsin plays well at home. I mean, even if they're a bad team, which they are this year, they're going to play well at home. Harris had that mind fart at the end of the game, which was just unbelievable. I couldn't believe that he stepped out of bounds. I mean, in all honesty, it was a choke job. I mean, you can't blow a 4-point lead with less than a minute to go. You cannot do that. That is just a choke job. And, I think the team is going to be fine in the long run, but that's just a bad loss. You cannot lose that game.
Well, I want to talk about a couple things really quick, just kind of put a cap on some of the things that you said. You talked about the hand fouls and things of that nature. Tom Izzo tied the perimeter players' hands behind their backs to play defense in practice to try to, I guess, get them accustomed to not using their hands as much. We've talked about numerous times the freedom of movement rules are the worst thing. It's the worst thing for college basketball. You also talked about Madison being a tough place to play. Keep in mind, Maryland is still, despite their loss to Michigan, they're still looked at as one of the top 10 teams in the country. And they had to rely on some heroics from Melo Tremble to win that game. It took a last-second buzzer beater to beat the Badgers in Madison. And so losing there, regardless of Wisconsin's record, is not really a bad thing. Mike, let's get to you. What did you see? Did you see anything else that might have contributed to the loss?
Well, I saw three players on Wisconsin combined for 66 points, which you just cannot have that. You cannot have three players basically score all the points. Only 11 points were scored by other players. Yes, they got a lot of free throw opportunities at that, but two of their guys shot over 50% and each got 15 shots each. You can't allow that to happen with a Wisconsin team that doesn't really have depth outside of that. You got to force the ball into other people's hands and make other players beat you. And Michigan State did not do a very good job of that. Of course, the fouls contributed to that, and I think it got into their minds when the foul numbers went up, and it made it a little bit more difficult to defend for sure. but you cannot allow three players to beat you.
Well, I want to actually talk about something that is very similar, and it's the one series that I keep going back to, not in the game. It was a NBA series a while ago when the Pistons were building an Eastern Conference dynasty, if you will. They were playing the Orlando Magic and Tracy McGrady. They were down 3-1. They realized they couldn't stop McGrady. And so they let T-Mac get his and shut down everybody else. In Michigan State, if you noticed that over the years, the star players for the other teams continue to get theirs, but they don't see a lot of contributions from other players. So you said it, Nigel Hayes and Bronson Koenig, they got theirs. Is that just how Izzo's going to play it, or was that a situation where there were a lot of mental lapses on defense?
I don't know. I might play it. I think it plays a little bit into the coaching style to an extent. Tom Izzo is a little bit – he can be stubborn with the way he coaches, but it turns out a lot of times. I think you ought to cue in on a few guys, though. If a guy's lighting you up and he's shooting over 50% with – 15 plus shots, you got to lock down on them, and you got to force others to beat you, especially because Wisconsin is relatively young, or the players that are of older age, they haven't played a whole lot. So if you make a guy shoot, you know, if Wisconsin beats you and they get a guy who never scores really in any other game to score 15 points, then they beat you. They beat you straight up. But I don't think you can live with allowing a guy like Nigel Hayes or Bronson Koenig to each score 25 points. That's just not acceptable to me.
Right, well, Bronson Koenig, he plays at the point. So, Mike,
yeah,
we'll start this with you. How big of a loss over the next couple of weeks is this injury to Tum-Tum Naren going to be? Plantar fasciitis, they said it's an indefinite amount of time. They're projecting 2 weeks from everything that I've seen. Have you seen anything different, and how big of a loss is this?
I think that this is going to be a pretty big loss. It's going to force other guys to step up that haven't stepped up as much. I honestly think they may do what they did with Draymond Green in his senior year sometimes and let him take the ball up sometimes, because he's just it's a leadership thing. To this point, Tum-Tum doesn't provide a ton of offense necessarily, but he provides a lot of leadership. He runs the offense well. I think it's going to be some sort of an adjustment, and I think even further, maybe how it'll affect more is the fact that this team might have a little bit of a confidence block right now, having come off two losses. I think they really need a strong performance this upcoming week, and to play Nebraska on Wednesday, that's a really big game to get your mind focused for the rest of conference play.
Ryan, your thoughts on the Naren situation?
I mean, people have complained about Naren. A lot of people have complained about his offense, how he's a liability offensively, especially shooting. I mean, they got fair points there, but at the same time, what he brings defensively into the leadership table is a lot. It's a huge loss. I mean, you could see with Koenig going off that MSU was missing Naren defensively big time. I mean, he doesn't shoot well at all. He runs the offense well, like Mike said, but at the same time, I mean, the guy brings so much defensively to the table. I mean, people have said, oh, yeah, well, Kay Felder went off on him. Well, Kay Felder has went off on almost everybody this year. So, I mean, it's a big loss, and they're going to miss him. There's no way around it. I mean, defensively, he is a humongous loss to this team. Offensively, he's been a liability, but still, I mean, it's not like him going away will help the offense more.
And one of the things that I want to touch on is, you said a lot of people tend to look at him as a liability, rather. It just goes to show you that his offense isn't measured in the box score. If you look at it, especially against zone teams, Michigan State, they've had a hard time getting the ball into the middle of the zones like they've done so effectively since Tom Izzo's been the coach. But this year, they've struggled doing it. Nairn, with his speed, with his quick first step and everything else, he was able to penetrate that zone. He's able to get into the middle of it. And, you know, despite his height, people do take advantage of it. He's still the best defender on the team, at least on the perimeter. Ryan, you said it. His leadership's huge. He's pretty much second in command to Denzel Valentine. He's a good decision maker, which, despite how much I like McQuaid, because I think Matt McQuaid is going to be fun to watch and he's going to be a great four-year player for the Spartans. McQuaid's not there yet. Tom, he pushes going back to his offense, he pushes the ball, allowing the shooters from Michigan State to get set up before the defense even does. And I don't get it. There's been an issue as far as what fans think of him. But Mike, you said it, what he does can't be measured in the box score. I mean, this is a huge loss for the Spartans, and especially when you look ahead to their schedule. Michigan State, Nebraska doesn't really have fantastic point guard play, but Michigan State, they play Maryland on Saturday. Last season, he averaged 21 points a game against MSU with Denzel Valentine and pretty much everybody guarding him on the perimeter. Travis Troy and Maryland were all guarding him. And then there's a chance that he misses beyond Northwestern, where Michigan State would have to play Derek Walton in U of M. Looking at the Wildcats, sophomore guard Bryant McIntosh is averaging 15.8 points and around 7.5 assists per game. Can McQuaid handle the pressure with the quality of point guards that he may end up seeing over the next couple weeks, Mike?
I'm a little bit worried about McQuaid. I can't lie. He seems to really feed off of his shot, and his confidence comes from his shot. And I see a little bit of Keith Appling with that, because that's a little, Keith Appling was a lot like that in his freshman season, from what I remember. I think that he does need to, you know, this might be a good chance for him to grow. I think there may be a little bit of a growing pain with this, but I also believe that he has an opportunity to really become a better player as a result of this, because he's going to be forced to do other things. And I don't know if we've seen him do that as much, but I don't think he's had the opportunity to showcase that. So I think this is a huge test for him. I think that, you know, there's reason to be concerned, but I think that there's also reason to trust that Tom Izzo will do what he needs to and make the adjustments needed to set him up for success.
I just wanted to say one more thing about McQuaid. I don't think I've seen a player in the Tom Izzo era throw an entry pass into the paint better than McQuaid does. Is that a fair enough statement?
Yeah, he's pretty good. I just don't think he's had the experience. I think his shot is what drives his confidence, and he's no Darrell Summers, that's for sure. His shot isn't everything, but he's going to get a chance to showcase that, and really maybe even be more of a better overall player than a guy like Appling was his freshman year, because Appling was largely just a shooter.
Well, we saw a little bit what Michigan State's going to do without Tom Ryan. Let's go to you. McQuaid, he's not a point guard.
He's not a true guard.
He depends upon the shot. He's just playing point guard. He still doesn't have the ball handling skills down. Sometimes he does try to force his passes into the offense. Can Michigan State survive without a true point guard on the roster now?
I think obviously the Maryland and Northwestern and Michigan games are worrisome, as you said, as they have pretty good point guard play. But at the same time, McQuaid worries me. Yeah, he worries me with his ball handling skills. You brought up the point I was planning on bringing up myself. His ball handling skills aren't there yet, and you can tell whenever he's bringing the ball up or he has pressure on him.
Like Mike said, I think that this is going to make him all around a better player in the long run, maybe even starting this year. I do like McQuaid for 4 years. I think that he's going to be a very, very good player, and I think a lot of opposing fan bases are really going to dislike him once you get to his junior and senior year. He's not like a pure point guard like you said, but at the same time, Michigan State last year, I mean, they had Tum Tum, but at the same time, Travis Trice wasn't really a pure point guard himself, and they survived with that. So, I mean, it's definitely possible to survive without a true point guard.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how everything goes.
Right, but where I'm saying it could be an issue is Trice was a combo guard, I'll grant you that, but I feel McQuaid is a shooting guard forced into the point guard role.
I agree with that.
Yes.
I understand. Yeah.
And yeah, I think that you could even make a strong comparison to Appling, because when Appling was coming out of high school, that's what he was, a shooting guard. You know, that's what he was doing. So he had to learn the position. So that was a lot like what McQuaid's facing right now.
And some of that, the old school visor drills or whatever, you put the visors under your eyes so you can't see where the ball's at, would, I think, really benefit McQuaid moving forward in the offseason. Ryan, we talked about Deontay Davis the other day, and we talked about how he doesn't play and how a lot of Spartan fans, they were thriving off the knee-jerk reactions. They were getting their panties in a bunch, and they were complaining that he wasn't seeing a lot of time. Yet, he finally started, and people are still complaining, but there was a lot of he got in foul trouble early, and they were asking why he got pulled at the end of the game, because he wasn't going to foul out in the 20 seconds. And I'm going to make this case where the reason it took Tom Izzo so long to play him is not because of his athletic ability. It's because he's a freshman. Mentally, he's upstairs. He's a freshman. He's not like Draymond Green. He's not ahead of his time. And so I feel like Tom Izzo just didn't want any of the, we'll say, the mistakes that Aaron Harris made at the end of the game. He didn't want to see any of those take place, and so he brought in Javon Best. Do you think it's still fair for Tom Izzo to pull Davis in those types of situations when he's promising him more playing time? And not only is he promising Davis more playing time, he's doing it to the media.
Izzo knows what he's doing. He's paid the big bucks for a reason. I'm not a huge fan of him not playing in that situation, but at the same time, I totally understand his point with him being a freshman. He's just not ready to be in that type of situation late in the game. And like you said, the people complaining about him not playing when he was in foul trouble make me laugh. I remember somebody in the Facebook group that was talking about, I'm not going to single out anybody, but they were talking about how he got, I think it was only 5 minutes in the first half, and, you know, he's in foul trouble and people are complaining about it. There's a reason the guy's not playing, it's because he's in foul trouble. What do you want Tom Izzo to do? Do you want him to pick up another foul so he can't play more? It just doesn't make any... I mean, I get the frustration from the fan base, but some of them are just out of line. I think Davis, like you said, he's probably not ready to handle a situation like that, but at the same time, I do like seeing your most talented players in the game late in that situation, and in my opinion, obviously, in most people's opinion, Deontay Davis is a much more talented player than Javon Best.
Right. And really quick, if you want to go see where all that drama is, you can just type in Michigan State Recruiting on your Facebook search page. That will come up. In all seriousness, though, we do have a lot of good information that does come out of it. But you will also see the other side of things that we tend to be talking about here. Mike, what's your thoughts on Davis sitting late?
I say I'm going to trust Tom Izzo here. Part of me thinks he may be even challenging the likes of Javon Best to step up, especially in light of the fact that Davis is, you know, he's a freshman. I think that overall Davis would probably be the better guy to be out there, but I think he also trusts – I think it may not be a lack of trust in Davis. It may be a trust in Best as well. I mean, Bess has had his moments, to be sure. So he wants to – I think he wants to have all these guys be ready for when games are bigger, you know. And we talk about this a lot, you know, in the Michigan State fan base. We talk about how, you know, it'll be okay come March. It'll be okay come March. Well, that stuff doesn't happen overnight. You do it throughout the season. And Tom Izzo knows what he's doing, as Ryan said. He's doing stuff like this because – a loss to, you know, and I don't think in the back of his mind he's going to think, you know, we're going to lose to Wisconsin, but he realizes that a loss to Wisconsin in Big Ten play is not going to mean anything compared to a loss in the round of 32, for instance. You know, those are two big different things. So Tom Izzo knows what he's doing here. He wants to, you know, he wants to figure out who's going to be in this rotation. Is Best going to be one of those guys who gets major minutes in this rotation? The only way he can find out is if he puts him on the line. I think we all know Davis will be there come March, and he'll be probably a lot more like a sophomore when he's in that situation rather than a freshman.
Well, we've talked about the post game. You've had Deontay Davis, obviously. You've got Gavin Schilling. Marvin Clark, he still has his moments. I think you're looking at Best and Goins kind of fighting for that fifth big spot. But then you also have Matt Costello, who's been balling out of control on the season, 9.6 points per game, 7.8 rebounds, second in blocks, third in steals on the team. Is it time for Michigan State to stop relying on their – we'll start with you, Ryan. Is it time for them to stop relying on their perimeter game and maybe start putting the ball inside?
Yes. Yes, and yes, I can't emphasize how much I say yes to this. Matt Costello has been absolutely dominant since Big Ten play started. He has turned into the player that I thought he could become when he saw his high school cliffs. I thought that he'd be a really big-time player coming out. But he has finally turned into that player where you can just give him a ball, let him go to work, do what he does. I mean, they've got the guys down low that can dominate these smaller teams like a Michigan or, you know, like a Wisconsin who's not as experienced down in the post. The strength of this team, in all honesty, I mean, you've got Denzel Valentine, of course. I think the part of the strength of this team is definitely the interior offense that they have. You've got Costello down there. You've got Davis. As long as he stays out of foul trouble, same goes for Schilling. He's got to stay out of foul trouble too. But you've got the big guys down low that you need to, if you need to feed somebody in crunch time, that's who you can go to, especially Costello, the way he's been playing. He has been, I think, the unsung hero of the team this year. And I don't think he's getting all the credit he should get from some people.
Mike, what do you got?
Yeah, I would agree with Ryan. As the phrase goes, you know, you live and die by the three. And this team, and Izzo said this several times, this is his best shooting team. But when your shot isn't there, you got to have something else to rely upon because you're going to have slumps. You're not going to be able to shoot lights out in every single game. And Michigan State has that with this, you know, with this post play, these big guys that they have. And I agree completely with Ryan. I mean, you got Davis. You got Clark, who's done some good things. But Costello is the guy. He is the guy. He's the leader down there. As good as Davis is, he's the leader. And I've been a critic of Costello throughout his 4 years. I've been on him, you know, even earlier this year I was on him. You know, he just didn't see, you know, he wasn't showing his full potential to me. But now he's starting to do it. And, I'm liking what I see out of Costello. He's showing a lot of leadership by example in particular, and he's stepping up in big moments. He's picking up those 50-50 balls that Tom Izzo always talks about.
he's making big plays for this team. So, you know, maybe having, you know, Davis is going to do what he does typically, and maybe having one or two other guys, you know, like a Bess or a Clark step up and be a little bit better down there, that can help, you know, complement that good shooting Michigan State can have oftentimes.
Yeah, I've always been a proponent of you start inside and then you can kind of work your way outside. You start inside, you start bringing some of the attention that way. The help starts sagging a little bit more to help out, and then it opens up things for your three-point shooters. It opens it up for the Forbes, the Harrises, and the Valentines, and the Quades of the world. So we've got just a couple minutes here before we wrap. With the injury to Nairn, with where the Spartans are in the Big Ten. Right now they're seventh. The loss, if everything stays the same, they're looking at 9 or 10 come Wednesday if they lose to Nebraska in the Big Ten. Like I said, you've got the injury to Nairn. Valentine's trying to come off his injury. The Spartans are still trying to find their rotation with Maryland coming up, Michigan coming up, Northwestern coming up. It's Wednesday night. Michael, start with you. Is Wednesday night a must-win for Michigan State?
Yes, it's as much of a must-win as must-win can get because it's a Nebraska team on your home floor, a Nebraska team that, mind you, has played pretty well of late. They're not as talented as some of the teams in the conference, but they're a solid team if they play their best. You need to win that game. You're on your home floor. You cannot lose a second straight game on your home floor. You can't lose to a team that's not as good as you there. They need to win this game, and they need to get confidence going forward because Maryland will be a heck of a lot tougher coming off of three losses than it would coming off of a solid home win during the week. So, yes, this is a must-win.
Ryan?
Oh, no question about it. Mike hit the nail on the head there. There's no doubt that this is a game Michigan State has to win. Nebraska, well, like you said, has played better as of late, but at the same time, look at the teams that they've beaten. They've beaten the bottom feeders of the conference in their last three wins. They beat Rutgers, who might go 0-18 in conference. They beat Minnesota, who doesn't have a win in conference. They beat Illinois, who has not – they beat Purdue, they haven't played well at all. this is a game that Michigan State has to win, especially considering the conference race, because I think if you lose another game to a bad team, there's just no way this team can win the Big Ten if they lose this game. Because then you have to steal another road game and I just don't see that happening. Nebraska, yes, they've played better as of late, but just look at the competition they played. It's not good. Michigan State absolutely has to win this game.
And, I mean, I'm right there with you guys. Like I said earlier, I think Michigan State, for all intents and purposes, they're out of the Big Ten race right now. Right now, they need to focus on getting better. They went 13-0 in the non-conference slate. That's better than I think they've ever done under Tom Izzo. And so they already built up their resume. They had the Louisville, Florida, Kansas wins. So they built up their resume there. They need to focus on getting better. They'll still get a couple of those wins in the Big Ten. But you can't afford to lose to Iowa, then lose to Wisconsin. If they slip up against Nebraska, they're going to lose to Maryland on Saturday. That's 0-4 in the Big Ten, and Michigan State can't afford that. I'm right there with you guys. Mike, Ryan, guys, thanks for coming on, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Hey, thanks for having us, dude.
That's it for us today. For Ryan McCumber and Mike Sterner, I'm Tyler Hayward. This was the iSports MSU Red Cedar Report.